Good afternoon. You're tuned to KTVO News in Juneau and Karen and FM in Juneau here on Thursday, the 12th of February, the year 2015. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with MK McNaughton about our upcoming painting classes. Pat Race will be here with a preview of this weekend's Jump Festival movies. Peter Westman will be here to highlight the 1 billion rising event happening tomorrow. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Repeated at 4 on KRNN and available online via ktvo.org after the fact. Reminder that tonight at 7 o'clock on KTVO News, the Juneau World Affairs Council presentation of Faith-Based Diplomacy, Bridging the Religious Divide, will be happening with Douglas Johnston.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wisconsin's Menominee Tribe of Indians will use shoe leather to influence the governor to approve its casino plan. Some tribal members plan to walk 156 miles from their reservation to the state capital in Madison. From Wisconsin Public Radio, Patty Murray reports.
The Menominee plan to set off on the march Friday morning. It's partly a protest against Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, who recently rejected the Menominee's plan to build an off-reservation casino in Kenosha, which is 200 miles away from its reservation. The march is also partly aimed at drawing attention to an offer the Menominee are making the state. Governor Walker wants to bond $220 million in state money to help the Milwaukee Bucks professional basketball team build a new arena in Milwaukee. The Menominee say if the governor approves the casino, the tribe will pay the $220 million. Governor Walker is on a trade mission in London and hasn't directly commented on the offer. The Bureau of Indian Affairs has set a deadline of February 19th for his decision. I'm Patty Murray.
Alaska's governor is seeking a delay in a long-running tribal sovereignty case. The new administration says it wants to work on options other than more litigation. But critics say the state is trying to work around a court loss. KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
Last year, candidates Bill Walker, an independent, and Byron Mallott, a Democrat, were both considered unlikely to be able to unseat the Republican incumbent governor. Then in September, Mallott, a Tlingit Indian, withdrew from the governor's race. He joined the Walker ticket as a candidate for lieutenant governor and became the first Alaska Native to win statewide office. Native leaders had complained the former governor took every opportunity to sue them over sovereignty, so they were hopeful. But last week, the Department of Law filed a request for a delay in a tribal sovereignty case. Native American Rights Fund senior attorney Heather Kendall, who is representing the tribes in the suit, says her clients had hoped for a different approach.
They're not happy with this. The governor had indicated before the election that he would consider dropping this litigation effort altogether, and this is clearly not the case based upon his recent actions. What he apparently is trying to do is put the case in limbo so he can look at potential congressional alternatives.
At issue is whether Alaska tribes have the same rights as lower 48 tribes to put land into trust, a protected status that exempts lands from state jurisdiction, including taxation, something the Department of Interior had disallowed for Alaska Native tribes since the 1970s. In 2013, the Washington, D.C. Federal District Court ruled in favor of the tribes, but put a hold on actions until appeals were exhausted. Now tribes are awaiting word whether the state's request for a delay will be allowed. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Roughly 350 people gathered in front of the Rapid City Civic Center this week in South Dakota to rally against racism. The event was held in the wake of an alleged hate crime against a group of Native students at a hockey game. Organizers included the National Coalition Against Racism in Sports and Media. The group's Vice President Henry Boucher says officials need to take the issue seriously.
We need to continue and find that sustainability of resolve for some of these problems. And, you know, how we do that is yet to be written. You know, we need to open that dialogue, continue that dialogue, try to find our answers through communications.
The mayor agrees efforts to end racism must continue. Police are asking for patience as they investigate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 5th Annual Native American Training Institute, April 12th. Information on services and the NATI event at ahcnm.org. Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTVO News in Juneau at KRNN FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is M.K. McNaughton, who's going to be teaching some oil paintings and some mixed media classes in the near future. M.K., thank you very much for coming down to the station.
My pleasure.
So our first question is, what got you interested in art?
Oh, wow, good question. I always loved art, and actually I think everybody does. I think we unlearn it at a certain age. And
why do you think we unlearn it?
Well, I listen to a lot of adults around me now talking about how they're not artistic. And if the majority of people say that, and think about how that impacts the next generation. I think we're in a bad loop of doing that, because we learn pretty early on that you're either artistic or you're not, that idea. And then, I mean, personally, I always loved art, but I didn't call myself an artist until I was in my late 40s, because it seemed kind of arrogant to me to consider myself good enough to call myself an artist. So for me, it was the combination of that judgment and then not wanting to, like, claim I was really good at it. I just liked it. So if we really, I think everybody is an artist. When I was little, though, I remember one of my strongest childhood memories is sitting and drawing our house. I sat across the street, and my dad used to ring a cowbell when it was time for dinner to call us in from the neighborhood. I grew up in Portland, Oregon. And I stood up when the bell rang and realized I'd been sitting in gravel, and I'd been sitting there for a couple of hours. When I stood up, my legs were stiff, like they are when you forget, because I was so absorbed in the drawing and drawing the leaves and looking at shadow and light, the trees around the house and the shadow of every shingle, and looking at the world through a drawing was, I guess, kind of a meditation and a focus. And that's a vivid memory for me, that's what I love about art. And that's what I try to offer in my classes.
What's the first thing you tell your students when they come in?
Well, I try to set the table so that people can... I call myself an art waitress often. Before I called myself an artist.
Start a prize with that, please.
Yeah, set everything up so that when you walk in, you can shed off the rush of the day and all the things you know you should be doing instead of coming to an art class, and just have that feeling of getting absorbed in the art and enjoying it. So I don't know if I say anything as much as I try to create a welcoming environment when people come in.
You teach kids and adults. Is there a difference?
Some friends started asking if I would teach adults, and I felt like maybe I consider myself an emerging artist, and I thought, what can I offer? And friends asked me to teach it anyway, and I realized that the difference is that kids are free to try things and willing to do whatever, like, crazy thing I say, like draw this chair, and then I get them to stand up and move and continue their drawing from a different perspective, and they just take it on. They're like, that's a weird exercise, but it creates a cool piece of art, and we have a great conversation about it. So I was worried that adults might not be as free-thinking, and they are. The adults who found my classes, honestly, it's like watching a really great theater production for me, because people are just really happy to be creating art and focused on what they're doing. And so for me, it's almost like a spectator sport. I set the table, set up an exercise, a challenge. We reflect on the work together, and I just watch them. And what was your question? I got way off track.
Kids versus adults.
Kids versus adults. There isn't a difference. They're the same.
What do you think people's biggest challenges are when they when they approach the world of being an artist?
Well, I think that self-judgment that I describe for myself is also true for other people, that we, you know, art doesn't always, sometimes the drawing works out beautifully first time, sometimes it doesn't, often it doesn't. So it's, people get discouraged and judge themselves or their work. And what I try to teach, what I feel like I can teach, is practicing and learning from what we're doing as a problem solving exercise. So we can look at a stand back from a drawing or a painting, and if there's something that's just not working, we can discuss it as a group, not saying this is what I think you should do because I, you know, like I know more, but what is it is, and often people who have less artistic experience are able to go straight to the answer quicker than people who've been trained in method or, you know, have a certain judgment about what art should look like. One day I was working on a painting and somebody came in and I said, something is just not right with this. I'm struggling. And she said that your pond is too circular. And I wasn't even seeing it because I'd been so focused in creating. And I hadn't seen that really simple fact that was kind of wrecking the whole painting. So she was right. I made it more irregular and I liked the painting. So that's the real goal in the class, to learn how to, first of all, I love the mediums, charcoal and oil paint, and then to learn to suspend judgment.
Let's talk about the classes. In teaching an adult oil painting class and a kids' mixed media class.
Yep, and the adult oil painting class is 6 weeks. They both start next Monday, and the kids' class is 4 weeks. The kids' class ends just before spring break, and the adult class goes through March with a break during spring break. Well, we won't meet that week. And oil painting just takes a little longer. You have to let things dry. So 6 weeks, I think, is a minimum to really finish work. And we'll work on, we'll start with an exercise every class, and then people will pick something that they want to work on. They can bring an image, a landscape, or something abstract they want to work on. And I provide the materials in the cost of the class. So people can just bring their image and their ideas, and I'll give them things to practice.
Kids mixed media class, that sounds like you should do one for adults too.
I would
being
love...
Being a junk collector that you are.
Actually, that's maybe one of the differences between kids and adults. Sometimes it's harder to get adults to leap into experimenting with different materials as quickly as kids do. And so this class is meant to be lots of layers. We'll start out the first week in the kids' mixed media working with some warm plaster strips and make some forms, and we'll layer on drawing and painting and stitch things in too. So I also have ideas always about the things I want to teach, and then depending on the people who show up in the class, I kind of adjust accordingly. I had a group of girls who were all quite engineering minded, so I planned a lot of those classes towards really tactile things that they could construct because it suited those girls. And then I had a class that was all boys who really loved to draw, who really focused in quietly in drawing. So I catered that class a little more towards a multimedia drawing. So depending on who's in this group, we'll see. And the kids class is, if you try to sign up on my website, it's full, although I could squeeze one more in so someone could call me. The adult class has 3 spots left.
I'm wondering about the difference between men and women, because I feel like as a guy, I want to reach in there and fix something. It's wrong, and this is what you do to fix it. And women approach things in a completely different manner.
I often wonder how much we're projecting kind of gender things on assumptions we make, and how much we do that because it's been inflicted on us. But it's interesting. I've worked with a lot of boys have found my studio who really focus quietly in and draw and probably meet the stereotype of what you would expect girls to do. They're artists, and maybe they find me because they're not finding their place in school or somewhere else. But then I've had a lot of girls come in who really like multimedia dynamic things and aren't really worried about a product or a finished piece. They just like doing it. Sometimes they actually just like taking things apart more than they like creating. So,
men, women, kids, adults, it sounds like everybody's going to have fun in your class.
That's the goal. That is the real goal.
What does the teacher learn?
I am inspired by working with other people. I think working at the canvas is for 6 years is what really led me to call myself an artist. Finally, I worked with kids in the elementary school. I was the art on the cart lady, and then working with artists with disabilities at the canvas, I finally internalized the message that I was giving all these other people that you're an artist. Call yourself an artist. Be proud of it. Just in the elementary school, I saw that all kids loved art, and it was almost embarrassing when I came. They like jumped up and screamed. It's almost like a goddess position to be the art teacher. I had the class when the spec ed aides and the teachers all left to have their weekly meetings, so I had no support in the class. And I had no behavior problems because kids loved art. Fourth and fifth grade, they started picking on themselves, especially the girls. They started drawing more prescribed things like rainbows and saying, this isn't good. And I knew what they were doing. They wanted me to come over and say, no, that's beautiful. But I tried not to do that. I tried to tell everybody tried to teach everybody to use language that talked about how we look at art. Is it this line is really interesting, the shape of it, or this color makes me feel a certain way. You try to talk about the elements of art instead of saying it's beautiful or it's not beautiful. By not saying anything, you imply that once you say one person's art is beautiful. But I created an art law, and kids who remember me from grade school still bring it up. Someone brought it up the other day. If you say anything bad about your artwork or someone else's artwork, and it's usually your own, then you have to say two things you like about it. That's the art law. And they were really good about enforcing that. If a kid said something bad about their art, another kid would say, hey, she just said something bad. And we would all turn and listen to her say two things she liked about her art. So that's a lesson for me, watching other people, helping them work through their struggles. It teaches me to practice that. Maybe I teach what I need to learn.
I've been talking with Anne K. McNaughton about her classes coming up. There's an adult oil painting class coming up Mondays, starting next Monday from 5:30 until 8 p.m. And the kids' mixed media class goes from Mondays, February 16th and March 9th from 3:45 to 5:15 p.m. And more information is available on your website.
M.K. McNaughton, and that's M.A.C., mkmcnaughton.com. Yep.
Giant Puppets.
Giant Puppets. We're just wrapping up. And tonight is the last open studio down at the wharf from 4 to 8. So folks are welcome to drop in. It's kind of late in the game to start anything gigantic and new, unless you want to take it with you. But speaking of that, there's a lot of material that I will be recycling. If people want cardboard, paper, some of the junk that's around the studio, they're welcome to come collect. And it's all free. There's lots of fabric, too. So we'll be open Friday and Saturday for people to peruse through. Or they can contact me, too, if they want to set up a time to haul stuff away. But we are performing at Wearable Arts as pre-show entertainment. And my dream when I set up this project was that we would have giant puppets as big as Centennial Hall dancing around outside to greet people when they arrive for the show. And if the weather holds like this and it isn't dumping, we will have a lot of puppets dancing around outside Centennial Hall. And we still will, even if it's raining, but some of the fragile ones might not come out for very long.
MK, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Grandma! Modern art, that's how Grandma got her start. Grandma, Grandma.
2 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTWO News in Juneau and Karen and FM in Juneau. In the studio with me now are Pat Race and Aaron Searing from the
Jump Society.
Society.
Yes, Juneau Underground Motion Picture Society. We're from many places, but today we are from the Juneau Underground Motion Picture Society.
And you got a show this weekend.
Yeah, we have a show
tonight.
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 7 o'clock, and we have a 9 o'clock show on both Friday and Saturday.
So for people who do not know, how did this thing get started? How many years ago?
This started in, 2002,
summer of 2002.
Yeah, and it was just we wanted to make some short films and share them with people, and it's hard to get an audience for a two-minute film. So we decided to invite some other people to show their four-minute films and six-minute films, and then it all adds up into a show.
And then also having a deadline really forces us to make something, too. So that was also the additional benefit why we started doing this.
What's the latest you guys have gotten towards your deadline?
Oh, that's a good question. Actually, one year we were burning the we were using tape at the time. We were recording the second half while we were screening the first half. So that was the closest. But we haven't actually had a catastrophic failure yet.
Yeah, we've never had the show must go on. It always went on one way or another. So yeah.
Tell me about these films and the makers.
We have a bunch of great films actually. Let's see. Anton, how do you pronounce his name?
Doiron.
Anton Doiron, Jerry Smetzer, Greg Chaney, Danny Peterson, Riley Woodford, Lindsay Halvick, and Lou and Aaron, of course, and myself, Alice Taff, George Kuhar, Sonny Pittman, Corn Hugh Scandis. There are a lot of filmmakers in this community, and they've all made some really great things.
How many films do you have this year?
I think
I tallied 18, this one.
I'm going to go with Aaron's answer.
Is there a theme, or does it just happen magically by itself?
We don't assign a theme. We tried to once, and three people followed our directions, and so we decided not to give any instructions ever again. But themes do emerge, and I think this year, if I had to pick out a theme, I'd say it's sort of like wilderness and the outdoors. There are just a ton of people that are kind of exploring the outdoors around them and around the state, and a lot of these filmmakers got outside for this one.
What's the cheapest you can get away with getting gear for a film?
Well, you could use your phone. We've had people use their phones before, and if you already have a phone, it's probably got a camera on it and can make a movie out of it. Or you can be a student and you can mooch off the university or high school's equipment. We've had a lot of student filmmakers. We have a lot of elementary school filmmakers in the past.
Yeah, it doesn't really take much as far as things go. You can edit everything with a $2 app on your phone, or if you need to. So, yeah.
So you've been doing this over 10 years. Have the filmmakers gotten better?
the filmmakers, the technology's definitely gotten better. The filmmakers have gotten better.
Definitely.
We've had a lot of filmmakers here have started with little small films and started doing more and more ambitious projects, and some of them have been accepted to festivals and gone on to work in the industry or gone to film school.
Yeah,
it's been really cool to watch the little local film community that we have here kind of grow up in and around this festival.
Do you ever have an evaluation process that doesn't – it's not whether a film makes it into the show or not, but afterwards people talk about what they've done and get some inspiration from others?
We don't have a formal evaluation process, but we've had people come in and take notes.
We've tried that before, and it sometimes works, and yeah, it just like kind of fell apart after that. It was really a fun thing, though, and we should probably maybe look into doing that again.
That's a great idea, Jeff. We'll do it.
Well, for me, I made a film that was just way too long, and the best judge of that, and the best how I learned that was by watching people fall asleep while I was showing it.
Yeah, and that's part of what the festival is. It's proving ground. It's a training area to like you bring your film in and realize that people aren't laughing or crying at the right spot, and then you kind of have to ask yourself why. And
the tough questions come out of that. Yeah,
yeah.
We provide the audience, and then you get to kind of see how the audience reacts to what you created.
But you also get
really
to learn from other people's films, too, which
definitely
is fun. Yeah.
So the first show is on tonight.
First show is tonight, 7 o'clock at the Gold Town Nickelodeon.
Still plenty of tickets left. Come on down, yeah.
And how many do people get tickets just coming down?
At this point, you probably just show up at
get
the show.
Get in the door. There's
yeah.
also tickets are available at the gallery, Alaska Robotics Gallery on Front Street for all the shows. But there's, yeah, still plenty of tickets left. And so if you find that you don't have a ticket but you still want to come to the show, definitely come down.
I asked M.K. McNaughton about her art kind of training. What does a teacher learn? And what have you learned about filmmaking by watching other people's?
I get a ton of ideas. I get inspired by watching other people's films. It's always stimulating to see other people's work and reflect on what choices you might have made yourself. And so I think that as an artist, you never work in a vacuum, and it's always important to surround yourself with both good and bad work so that you can kind of decide what choices you want to make yourself.
And you do this a couple of times a year?
The film festival we do twice a year, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, next one will be in July probably, maybe.
Yeah, so if you didn't get a film in this time and you really want to make something, just we've got kind of a rolling deadline. You can always just drop something off. And
yeah, we're accepting submissions for next time already, so bring it in.
Do you have any classes coming up?
We don't have any workshops scheduled, but we've been trying to get something together. In the past, we've brought folks to town to teach filmmaking workshops. And one thing that I really want to try and do is do like a filmmaking workshop for biologists. There's a lot of people who are like wilderness enthusiasts or biologists that are out in nature that are filming things and maybe don't have like a background on they don't know exactly like what to shoot or how to edit it, but they are still interested in telling their story, and I want to help them to make better stories. So I think that's a class that might be coming up.
Yeah, they get out into some amazing places, but they don't necessarily know what to do with it when they're out there.
There's a challenge to all biologists out there. Get a hold of these guys and
sure.
How do they do that?
Oh, how do they track us down? The Jump Society has a website, jumpsociety.org, or we're kind of just always around downtown, and you can find us at the Alaska Robotics Gallery on Front Street.
All right, Pat Race and Aaron Soaring, thank you so much for coming in. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Come to the film festival. There's some great films. Yeah, I maybe we said that already, but yeah. Come on out. It'll be great.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 12th of February, 2015. It's the birthday of two men born on the same day in 1809, Charles Darwin and Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, born near Hodgenville, Kentucky, 1809. Little is known about his early life. He never wrote any memoirs. We know that he was born in a log cabin. He had only about a year of traditional schooling. His mother died when he was 9 years old. He spent much of his adolescence working with an axe. But when he was in his early 20s, he showed up in New Salem, Illinois, having decided to remake himself as a professional man and to study law. Charles Darwin, born Shrewsbury, Shropshire, England, 1809, on this day, took his famous voyage to South America when he was only 22, bringing with him a book called Principles of Geology by Charles Lyell, which suggested that the Earth was millions of years old. Studied the animals on the Galapagos Islands, and it took Darwin a long time to publish his findings about evolution because he was afraid of being attacked as an atheist. The book finally came out in 1859. It's the birthday of the poet and editor Deborah Garrison, born Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1965, graduated from Brown, married her high school sweetheart, joined the staff of The New Yorker. Her first poetry collection, A Working Girl Can't Win, published in 1998, sold over 30,000 copies, a lot for a book of poetry. And it's the birthday of Judy Blume, born Elizabeth, New Jersey, 1938, author of more than two dozen books for young people. Started writing seriously when she was 27. She had two preschool children. Stories were rejected for the first 2 years. And then in 1970, she had a big breakthrough with a novel for young adults, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, the story of an 11-year-old girl trying to make sense of religion and boys and menstruation, a book that was banned in many schools and libraries. Judy Blume lives in Key West, writes at a desk facing a garden, then in the summer in a small cabin on Martha's Vineyard. Here's a poem for today by Ted Kozer, The Red Wing Church. There's a tractor in the doorway of a church in Red Wing, Nebraska, in a coat of mud and straw that drags the floor. A broken plow sprawls beggar-like behind it on some planks that make a sort of roadway up the steps. The steeple's gone, a black tar-paper scar that lightning might have made replaces it. They've taken it down to change the house of God to Homer Johnson's barn, but it's still a church with clumps of tiger lilies in the grass and one of those box-like glassed-in signs that give the sermon's topic, reading now a bird's nest and a little broken glass. The good works of the Lord are all around. The steeple top is standing in a garden just up the alley. It's a hen house now. Fat leghorns gossip at its crowded door. Pews stretch on porches up and down the street. The stained glass windows style the mayor's house. And the bells atop the firehouse in the square. The cross is only God knows where. The Red Wing Church by Ted Kozer, from Sure Signs, New and Selected Poems, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Grove Press, publishers of The Big Seven by Jim Harrison, the story of a hapless detective up against a family of outlaws and his struggle to come to grips with the seven deadly sins, in bookstores everywhere. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Thirty-four minutes past the hour. You are tuned to Juno Afternoon here on KTO and Karen Ann. In studio with me next is Frieda Westman, here to talk about the event tomorrow. 1 billion Rising Revolution is the theme. Frieda, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me here to talk about 1 billion Rising, a global movement to end violence in the lives of women and girls. And Juno is having our own event. This will be the third year that we're doing this, and we're very excited about it. 1 billion Rising is about 6 billion people being on this planet. Half of them are women. A third of those women will be hurt in their lifetime for being a woman or a girl. And 1 billion Rising is about rising against the violence, and it is a joyful event. And this is a global event. We do this on V-Day, which is Valentine's Day, although this year we're doing it on Friday, February 13th.
How did it get started?
Eve Ensler, the playwright, and is the creator. She's the creator of Vagina Monologues. And she wanted to show the world that we can come together and rise against the violence against women and girls. And there are events happening around the world that she has inspired. There are events happening in every country. There's 207 countries that have signed on to be a part of 1 Billion Rising. That's a lot of countries.
Okay, that's amazing.
It is.
It starts tomorrow at 12 noon at Marine Park. Do you want to talk about the order of things?
Sure, I do. So we are very lucky to have the U.S. Coast Guard, Station 17, who is going to play a song over their loudspeaker system to be heard in this area here around the Coast Guard station. They're going to play a song for people to rise and dance. That is what this movement is about dancing to end violence. It's a dancing without borders. And they are participating in this, and we're very happy to have the military involved with our movement, this movement. So that is starting at 12 noon. And then we are also meeting at Marine Park, and people are going to come there. We're going to have a song that we'll play and dance, and we'll be have drumming, which this year's theme is revolution, and drum, dance, rise. And so we're having drummers this year, and we have very lucky to have Yisku'u, led by Nancy Barnes. They will march and lead us to Rockwell, which is the old Elks Hall, and we're going to follow them as they drum our way to Rockwell. So we'll be at Marine Park about 10 minutes and then be at Rockwell at about 12:15, where we are going to have a welcome by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Executive Director, Lori Morton. And we'll have an address by Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, who will be speaking about rising against violence and about violence in our state and standing against violence. Then we're going to have music and a DJ. Kristen Plose is our DJ, and she's going to be playing music where we will dance, and we're going to hear from Peter Narrows, who is the ANB Grand Secretary, and myself as the ANS Grand President. We'll talk about rising against violence, and we'll have a spoken word performance by Christy Name Erickson, and we're very excited to have her do some of her art for us, perform. And PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus is going to be singing a song for the event. And Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, the executive director of the AWARE shelter here in Juneau, will also say a few words. And we are also going to have Kristen Mabry, who is a Zumba instructor and the owner of Mountainside Wellness, lead us in a song that is the theme song, really, for 1 Billion Rising, and that's Break the Chain. And it's a very upbeat dance, and we're excited that she is going to do this and teach us the dance moves.
There's going to be a short film to start everything off at 12:15?
Yes, there is. It is 1 Billion Rising Revolution, and it is going to be, about 9 minutes long, and that will be right at Rockwell, starting right around 12:05.
Mm-hmm. It ends at 1 o'clock, right on the button.
Right on the button, maybe a little bit before that. We want people to use their lunch hour for this event, and we want to begin at noon and end by 1 so that folks can not be late back to work.
And there's a website you want to tell people about?
I do. This is the most inspiring website. It is 1billionrising.org, and there are many YouTube videos posted there, and there are poems. There are Juno is registered at this website as having an event, and you can look at events, go to a map and find where there is an event close to you. If you are traveling on V-Day, which is February 14th, and you want to go to a 1 Billion Rising event in Seattle or Portland or Manila, there it shows where those events will be taking place.
Frida, thank you for working on this. And you're suggesting that people wear red or pink?
Yes, red or pink. It is the color of V-Day, so 1 Billion Rising.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
We will have cheerleaders and basketball players and children who have made signs for 1 Billion Rising. It is a family-friendly event, and we want as many people to come as possible. We want to stand together and rise as one. Thank you.
support for this station comes from Sitka's Fly-In Fish-In, offering 10 oceanfront rooms near downtown with a full-service bar, restaurant, wireless internet, and other amenities. Information is available at flyinfishin.com.
This is Bird Note. The image of this dapper black-capped chickadee frequently adorns Christmas cards and bags of birdseed. But the black-capped is only one of 7 species of chickadees found in North America. All are variations on a bold and engaging model, and each calls chickadee with its own regional accent. While you'll find the black-capped chickadee across the northern U.S. into Canada, its close cousin, the Carolina chickadee, holds sway in the southeast. Hike among conifers in the Rockies, and you'll be greeted by the husky voice of a mountain chickadee. Or listen in the dense spruce forests of Canada for the call of the boreal chickadee. A chickadee of resplendent brown, the chestnut-backed chickadee, calls the Pacific Northwest home. The Mexican chickadee just nudges into the mountains of southeast Arizona. And the gray-headed chickadee turns up in the extreme northwest corner of the continent, north of the Arctic Circle. No matter which chickadee you find, take a moment to enjoy one of nature's most delightful creatures. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Forty-seven minutes past the hour, you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau at KRNN FM in Juneau. In the studio with me now is Nancy Dutourney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council here with Arts Up. What's going on?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. We got craziness happening over at the Jack. It's leading up.
Usually around Valentine's Day. And
yes, Valentine's Day. It's parent-teacher conferences, so the kids are out of school. We got a 5-day weekend. It's all kinds of things. And, of course, it's wearable art this weekend. So we're kind of busy right now. But let's see. You've already talked about the giant puppet project?
Yes.
Okay. The puppets are amazing. I went down there the other night, and they are amazing. So I hope everybody gets a chance to participate with those. We have Salmon Love, A Journey at the Glacier View Room at 6:30 p.m. Out at the Egan Lecture Hall. And you were talking about the Jump Festival. So everybody's going to go get their tickets to that. It's happening over this weekend. And Friday, Climate Change in a New Light. They have this down at being at 6:30 in the morning. Is that what they mean by new light?
It could be, but I don't think so. I think it's 6:30 in the evening and 8 o'clock.
But also Friday at 7 in the morning till noon or so, it is the Great Backyard Bird Count. In your backyard, you're just supposed to take 15 minutes and go out and count your birds, and then you log in onto this website and note how many birds you saw. It's sort of the citizen scientist type thing, and sponsored by the Audubon. So it's a nice day. Go out and do that. Chair yoga for seniors at the Senior Center. And you just talked about the 1 billion rising with Frieda West. And so that starts down at Marine Park at noon and goes up to Rockwell by 1 p.m. There is Science Friday at the library. There's Lego exploration. This is at the Juneau Public Library downtown from 1 to 3. There's a Sigla social, Friday night social at the Imperial Saloon from 6 to 8. Suite 907 is offering a Mardi Gras party. I've been getting a lot of calls about this with questions that I can't answer. It's happening out at Suite 907, and it's because Fat Tuesday is coming right up. So
it's a fundraiser for the Alaska Elite.
People were, yeah, there's questions about whether they need to have costumes and this and that. So I would say call them and head on out. It sounds like it's going to be fun.
Masks are required.
And
then you'll take them off at midnight.
Okay. All right. So you got it, folks. Jeff knew these things. On Saturday at 9 a.m., it is the Tongass Turners monthly meeting out at the Thunder Mountain High School woodshop. At 10 a.m. to 4, there is an afternoon of beauty and bridal events of all sorts of vendors and photographers and whatnot. If you're planning to be married sometime soon and want to be meeting people that might be able to help you with your wedding, this is out in the Orca Room. Let's see. There's also a mustache brunch happening at Paradise, which is out on Glacier Highway. I think if you don't have a mustache, they will provide you with one. You already have a mustache, so you're good.
And Marion Call is going to come by tomorrow on the show
and talk more, because she'll be performing, as I understand it. So, and
well, Joan is busy baking.
Yes. So it sounds like a wonderful time, a nice way to start your Valentine's Day.
And the reason for this party is because they have just gotten their beer
liquor now. License. Yeah. Yeah. So go out there and help them celebrate with that. Let's see. At noon, I Care About Climate Change. There's a Valentine's Day at the Glacier from noon to 2 at the Glacier Visitors Center. Of course, Dan Hobson is playing classical guitar in the Gold Room at the Baranoff. Makes a real nice dinner for your Valentine. There's the Jump Festival, and of course there's the wearable art. Saturday is sold out, as is Sunday. Saturday's show begins at 8. If you're interested, this is an all-new layout, so we don't know if we'll be able to squeeze more chairs in or not. Sometimes we can do that. So I would say if you would like to take your chances, come down at 7. We'll be running a wait list at that time on Saturday, or come down at 2 on Sunday, and we'll try to get everybody in. It's going to be a very exciting show this year.
It's a new stage.
It's a new stage. It's a new director, a new set of MCs. Everything is excitingly new, including the fact that the programs are already printed. We're never this close. Anyway,
miracles do happen.
Miracles do occasionally happen. I want to thank Alaska Litho and Allison Crine for that work. Monday is Elizabeth Pradovich Day and President's Day. It's a school holiday at the Juneau School District. And let's see, at 6 p.m., there's the Tlingit Language Learners at the Downtown Public Library. That is free. And our gospel workshops begin at 6:30 p.m. with Bobby and Eustace are coming in. If you haven't ever done this, this is a really great opportunity to just really sing out, is all I have to say. Tuesday is Mardi Gras, and there is a... there's an arts roundtable, but there's Fat Tuesday Follies at Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church. It says they're going to have pancakes until everybody is full. So I would go if I were you.
Sounds like you need a pancake yourself.
I need a pancake right now. 5:30 to 7:30 for the Rights of All. It's a celebration of Elizabeth Pradovich at the Douglas Public Library. And also at 5:30 to 8, there's the Thunder Mountain High School's robotics dinner at Donna's Restaurant. And let's see, the Nickelodeon's showing some good stuff. You should go on their website and check it out. On Wednesday, let's see, there's gentle yoga at Rainforest Yoga. And the Arts Council is having a board meeting, just in case you needed another meeting in your life. You could join us for that. But all week is going to be the gospel workshops going on. And then on Friday, Friday the 20th, will be the Motown concert, which they do just before they do their celebration. So it's a busy week, for heaven's sakes. February is packed for such a small month. You notice that?
It's this time of year.
It's this time of year, and then March.
February always happens this time of year.
And then March comes right after it and is equally crazy. So somebody came by the office this morning looking for information about how to sign up for gallery exhibits. And two things I'll say. Our gallery applications are going up very shortly, and they'll be due in April. But also, if people are interested in having gallery shows, I need that information, because sometimes other galleries come to us and say, we're looking for an artist. Do you know anybody that's got something ready? So if there are artists out there that want to have their art on exhibit, give me a call. We'd be interested in that.
And your phone number is?
586-ARTS. And you can also get all this calendar information on jahc.org or ktoo.org. So I want you to keep busy.
And you keep busy yourself, Nancy.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Weather forecast for tonight, patchy fog, periods of rain with low temperatures 32 to 38 degrees. Forecast for Friday, patchy fog in the morning with periods of rain, high temperatures around 40 degrees. Friday night, more rain with low temperatures around 36 degrees. Saturday, rain showers with high temperatures around 39 degrees. Sunday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and high temperatures around 40 degrees.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 1-